Welcome to Grace Point. If you've been with us, you know that we are in question number 4 of a series we're calling Better Decisions and Fewer Regrets. We want to encourage you, if you have missed any of these, or if you're joining us for the first time or the first time in a long time, to go back and watch the previous weeks. We really believe that the questions that we are asking have the potential to help us make better decisions, which will lead to fewer regrets. Now, before we dive into the sermon, I want to encourage you to stay all the way till the end because Pastor Wes is going to be back to share something with all of us. All right, so our anchor verse for this series has been in Proverbs 27:12. And we've been reading it every week and we've been encouraging you to memorize it with us. And so we're going to put it on the screen and we're going to read it together. A prudent person foresees danger and takes precaution. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequence. We said that a wise person then is one who is aware. They see what's going on around them. They know what's going on inside of them. And as a result, they can take appropriate actions. They can avoid the danger, minimize the danger, hopefully minimize some of the consequences that might come out of that encounter they have with danger. And that's in contrast to the simpleton, the naive one, or as I've mentioned a couple times, my personal favorite translation that says, the stupid one who just keeps on going, right? They don't see it, or they see it and they minimize the danger, or they overestimate their capabilities. And when they, i.e. you and me, do this, we end up with regrets. And we aren't the only ones that have to regret these decisions. Others end up regretting our decisions because our decisions impact others. Now, you know, hopefully you know, that you cannot go through life completely without regrets. You can't avoid them. And having regrets isn't necessarily a bad thing, right? Our failures, our mistakes can be learning experiences. But think about this. Wouldn't it be nice if we could minimize our regrets? We could choose what we're going to regret. We could lessen the negative impact that our choices have on us and on others. Wouldn't you like to be able to look back at your decisions and go, that was a wise decision. I'm a prudent person, rather than going, oh my gosh, I was stupid. And I think one of the problems that is so hard when we're making decisions isn't that we don't see the danger ahead, right? It's not that we're not willing to take precautions. It's that danger doesn't always look like we thought it was going to look. We often think of danger as being very clear, very black, and very white, right or wrong. We assume that there is clarity to danger, and sometimes there is. But just as often, and I think probably a lot, and I think the Proverbs writer would agree that sometimes danger lives in the gray. It lives in decisions that are not right or wrong. They're just different. So different circumstances, this decision could be wrong, or it could be right. I could make this decision and it's a wise thing to do. You make it and it might not be wise. And our human brain tends to fight that kind of complexity. Like, we like simple, we like formulas. We don't want to have to grapple with 14 steps to make a decision. And I don't think that's because we're dumb or simple people, but I think we want control. We want to understand why and how it all works together. We want clarity. And I think most of us want to do the right thing. So we're like, just tell me exactly what the wise thing is to do and I'll do it. But here's the other problem with this. As much as we may want to do the right thing, there is a tendency in humans to, well, we look for loopholes, right? We look for shortcuts. We look for ways to get what we want in a moment or the long term that is as simple as possible, the easiest way to make a decision. So we start looking for the line. And I think you know what the line is, right? It's that line that tells us, well, just how close can we get before I've entered wrong, before I've entered the completely not okay territory. It's also the line that we start looking at to measure, well, how far over the line can I go before there's an actual consequence? And what is the consequence? Because then we'll start doing cost-benefit analysis when it comes to our choices. It's a line we all use when we're driving, or at least most of us, right? If the speed limit is 75, how fast can you go? 80, yeah, we all know that. And you can do that until you see the police. And then you need to slow back down to 75 because you've reached the line. Or if you're like risky, like some of us, you'll just stay steady because you make an assumption that you're just over. So he's probably not going to pull you over and give you that consequence. We could say it like this. If it's not wrong, then it's all right. If it's not illegal, then it's permissible. If it's not immoral, it's acceptable. If it's not over that line, then it's fine. If it doesn't hurt anyone, then it surely can't be harmful. In the situation of the driving the speed limit, we all know that's what everybody does, right? We all know this. So it's okay. And at first glance, this kind of seems to be true, right? Obviously, if a decision is immoral or illegal, if it hurts someone, if it breaks an industry standard, if it goes over a line, then of course, not only is that a wrong decision, but that would clearly not be a wise decision. And then from that, we assume then, well, if it's not immoral, if it's not illegal, it doesn't hurt anyone, no lines have been crossed, then it must therefore be a good decision or a wise decision. And humans love to live in this ground between what is legal and illegal, responsible, irresponsible. Where's the line between moral and immoral, ethical, unethical? Where can I be in control, but now I'm embarrassed? And the problem is that when we make decisions like that, right, we end up making wrong decisions. And it gets confusing because we know that a wrong decision will never be wise. But just because a decision isn't immoral, illegal, crossing a line, doesn't mean it's a wise decision. Think about it like this. All wrong decisions may be unwise, but not all right decisions are wise. So in short, if your head is spinning and you're thinking back, I'm in logics class, you know, A equals B, B equals C, A equals PQR, clearly I should not have been in logics class. Let's put it this way. A decision can be both not wrong and not wise at the same time. And that's why life is hard. In fact, when I was working on this message, I remembered one of my favorite quotes. You've probably seen it on Facebook or heard it. It's this. Courage is knowing that it might hurt and doing it anyways. Amen, right? Be courageous. But stupidity is exactly the same. And that's why life is hard. Like, how do you make that call? And this is what we're going to ask you today. It's called the maturity question, which basically is just because it's not wrong, just because it might even be right, doesn't mean it's wise. And that's why making decisions is hard. And I think that's why Paul writes the following in the book of Ephesians. He writes this. He says, so be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but like those who are wise. Make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. So Paul's a leader in the early church, and he's writing this to the church at Ephesus. And he has spent the first three chapters of this letter, he's encouraging the people, he's praying for them, he's going on about the glory and the wonder and the mystery of what God has done for the world through Christ. And then the last three chapters, he starts giving the people some instructions on how they should live in light of all of this. And so he gives really specific guidance. They're supposed to be patient and kind. He will walk them through how to respond to certain situations, specific instructions on specific relationships. But in the middle of this guidance, Paul says, look, you got to be careful how you live. He says, you can't be a fool, but you've got to be wise. And in doing so, he seems to imply that that's going to enable you to take advantage of, to make the most of every opportunity. In other words, I think Paul is saying there's all kinds of things you need to do, and there's all kinds of things you need to not do. But I want you to expand your vision a little, not just to do what is right and avoid bad, but I want you to take advantage of opportunities. And the idea behind the word that's used here for opportunities is redeeming, ransoming the time. Paul says it's not just about avoiding the bad and doing good, but I actually want you to redeem and ransom the spaces and the places that you are in. And these opportunities, they're going to come in all shapes and sizes and on different occasions. And so you're going to need more than just a checklist of what is moral and legal and permissible. You're going to need to access wisdom. So Paul's asking essentially what we're going to ask today. What is the wise thing to do? Now, if you remembered when we discussed our first question, the honesty question, that was week 2, we said you should ask, am I being honest with myself? And then we said you needed to add a word on there at the very end. So the question becomes, am I being honest with myself really? And I want to kind of do the same thing with this question, what is the wise thing for me to do? I want us to add some flesh to it. So we would say it like this, in light of my past experiences, in light of my current circumstances, in light of my future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for me to do? And I just want us to take the next few moments and kind of look at, real close at each of those phrases. So let's start, in light of my past experiences. Now this is obvious, we're not all the same, right? We have different experiences, different families of origin, we've had different things happen to us, we've been exposed to different things, our genetic makeup is different, we have different personalities. And then along with that, we all come with baggage. Now I know nobody likes to hear that, but we do. You could say we come with pre-existing conditions. The moment you were born, you were given some baggage from your families. And then our choices and things that happen to us, our experiences, creates more baggage. Sometimes that's good stuff, sometimes it's bad stuff. But here's what we know about that stuff. Our past predisposes us to certain strengths and certain weaknesses, to certain gifts and certain temptations. And so in light of who I am, in light of who you are, what is the wisest thing to do? And I'm going to give a really oversimplified example from my life that I think though will help us you be able to take it and apply it to any situation in your life. I have a lead foot. I like to drive fast. And if I am angry, if I am stressed, if I'm running late, which is a lot, if I am anxious, guess what? My foot is heavier. That's what I do. So recently, my husband and I, we took 6 teenagers to a winter retreat. It's about an hour and a half north of here. And when I was looking at when we needed to go, and I decided on the time that the kids needed to be dropped off at the church to get us where we needed to be, an hour and a half north, I added 30 minutes. Do you know why? Because I know me. And I wanted to make sure that we had time in case we got lost or we needed to stop for any reason. Because if we got lost, I was going to get stressed out. And if we were late to this new place that I had never been, then I was going to get anxious. And I know me to know that it was going to cause me to want to drive faster. And I still might drive fast and make it there with those kids intact, but I was increasing the chances that we would get in an accident. And I was doing so with kids that had been entrusted with me. Now, for some of you, you're like, Jessica, that's like, that wouldn't have been a problem. You don't speed. Or you're like, if I get lost, I'll figure it out. Or you're not going to get anxious if you're late. So you wouldn't need to do this. But I needed to do this. Would it have been wrong for me to tell the families that they just needed to show up an hour and a half before? No, I wouldn't have been sinning. It would have been allowable. It's what Google Maps said. But was it wise? In light of who I am, because of who was taking them, I needed to ask them to show up 2 hours before we needed to be there. So you need to do the same thing. You need to ask yourself when you're faced with the decision, in light of who I am, in light of the experiences I have, my makeup, what would be the wise thing to do? Then next we have my current circumstances. Now we all have seasons and rhythms to our life, and we need to consider the current season that we're in when we're looking at making a wise decision. Often we underestimate our current circumstances, right? We don't give them enough consideration, and so then we end up reacting in the moment, or we only think about kind of the short-term effect this decision will have. For example, if you find yourself in need of a newer vehicle, your vehicle is starting to fall apart, you can tell it's not going to last, and so you need a new or newer vehicle. You also know that there's a good chance you're going to get laid off from your job in the next 6 months. Is it morally wrong for you to go buy a car? No. Is it illegal? No. Is it allowable? No. I mean, yes, it's allowable. Getting all confused. See, this is why you get confused. But you could do this. There's nothing wrong with this decision. But it's probably not a wise decision in light of your current circumstances. And if your car doesn't hold up and it breaks down and falls apart and you have no choice but to buy a new car, can you go buy a new car, spanking brand new? Yeah, absolutely. But it's probably not a wise decision. You probably need to buy a used car. If you've just recently broken up with someone, you've had a failed relationship, are you allowed to go out and date? Absolutely. But is that a wise decision to enter into a new relationship so quickly after one has failed? When you and I fail to consider the current season of life that we're in, when we simply react in the moment, those decisions, while they may not be wrong, end up often being a gateway to future decisions that we are going to end up regretting. And then last we have, in light of my future hopes and dreams, what would be the wise thing for me to do? We all have a preferred future, right? We all have this sense of direction, this idea of what we envision or hope for the future. What are we going to accomplish? Is there something we're going to overcome? Where will we be in terms of our skill, our education, family, retirement, a career? What kind of person are we going to be? What is our character going to be like? What adventures are we going to take? And none of us plan to undermine our future, right? The problem is we just don't plan not to. In fact, I think many of our regrets come down to a lot of unwise decisions. Again, not necessarily wrong, but unwise that we made without thinking about their impact on the future. So if I want to have a good marriage, if I still want to like my husband Scott in 20 years, then I'm going to have to spend time with him. We're going to have to address conflicts. We're going to have to communicate our needs. We're going to have to compromise. We're going to have to share household chores and childcare. I'm going to have to make decisions today that love and respect my spouse so that we love and respect each other tomorrow. If I want to be a person 10 years from now that others look to, that they say, you're trustworthy and you're honest, then today I can't fudge my taxes. I can't lie on my college or my job application. When I'm asked something, I can't minimize or exaggerate the truth. No one sits around, well, I mean, I'm sure some people do, but most of us aren't sitting around going, in the year 2027, I want to commit a crime. I want to hurt someone. I want to sin in some way that's going to mess up my whole life. But when we don't ask ourselves, hey, what's the wise decision in light of where I want to be? We will place ourselves in spaces and places where we will be tempted and probably begin to give in and cut corners, dehumanize others. We will minimize, we will justify, and we will rationalize wrong actions. But it all started with an unwise decision. And we set ourselves up so that one day we are looking back in our rearview mirror, trying to find that line that we were spending all that time trying to figure out how close or how far over we could go, and we can't see it because the line is so far back and we are so far gone. Now here's the thing. This is all good advice. Whether you are a believer, whether you just attend church, you're skeptical, you're curious, you're seeking, you could be listening to this today and you're an atheist. This is still really good advice. But for those of us who call Christ Lord, I think there's a little something we want to do, a little more we want to add, and I would put it like this. We're going to put it up on the screen. In light of what Christ has done, and aware of how he is currently working, and understanding his plans, what he's got planned for the future, what is the wise thing for me to do? See, as Christ followers, we believe that God has always had a plan. He's always had a purpose for humanity since the beginning of creation. And we know that things have gone off course. Yeah, we can look around, we can see that. History tells us that. But God has not backed out of his good plan and his good purpose for us. And so through various people and the nation of Israel, he brought history to the point where Jesus came, the Son of God came. And Jesus extended his forgiveness and his love and his grace and his hope through the cross to all nations and all people. And then we believe that Jesus is not just some man of the past, but is actually God of the present. And he's still at work personally in our lives, in the lives of other people, and in the world. And you might ask, well, what's he up to? Well, he's doing the very thing that Paul felt led by the Spirit to tell the people at Ephesus. He's making the most of every opportunity. He's redeeming and he's ransoming people right now. Christ is working to make all things new. And the story keeps going because as Christ followers, we believe that this plan will extend well into the future where God already is. And he's preparing a place And then he's going to return. He's going to complete the new work that he's been doing in people. He's going to create a new earth, right? He's going to restore this earth. He's going to do all the work that was started when Christ died and rose again. So God is not just redeeming and ransoming, but he's restoring. And we are not done, because as Christ followers, we have experienced this redemption, this restoration, and then we are called to go out into the world and participate with God in restoring the world. And so in light of that, we've got to make decisions. When I'm faced with something, as a Christ follower, I need to think, in light of what Christ has done for the world, in light of what Christ has done in my life, thinking about how he's currently working in the world and how he's currently working in my life, and when I think about what he has in store for the future, this redemption and restoration for both me and the world, what is the wise thing to do? It's fascinating to me. If you go back to that scripture in Ephesians, Paul tells them that this wise living, right, that will make the most of every opportunity, this wise living that's going to redeem and ransom, they're to do this in evil days. It's almost as if wise living is a remedy for evil. We tend to see right and wrong kind of as equal opposing forces. And I think that's mostly accurate. But I think it leads us to some incorrect thinking about God, because then I think we end up thinking that God and evil, God and Satan, are equal opposing forces as well. And they're not. Evil opposes both right and God. But Satan, evil, is not equal to God. And so Paul says in the middle of his letter, where he's telling people about right and wrong, about what to do, he says, you got to be wise. You got to be wise. And he links it to dealing with evil. To oppose evil takes more than just doing good and just avoiding evil. It includes you and I being wise. And I think that's part of what makes following Christ hard. Because just being right isn't enough. I wish it was, but it's not. We need to be wise. And thankfully, according to James, who writes a letter in the New Testament, if we lack wisdom, we don't have to be afraid or worry. But we can go to God and we can ask God to give us wisdom, and he will give it to us graciously. And so we want to encourage you this week to begin to ask this question: what is the wise thing to do? We want you to continue to memorize and meditate on Proverbs 27:12. And just like we've done each week, we've got a few questions that we want to encourage you to reflect on this week, personally, individually. And then we want to encourage you to discuss that either in a group or with a couple people, a friend, a spouse. And the first question is this: can you think of a time when you made a decision and it wasn't wrong? Wasn't illegal, right? Wasn't harmful. It wasn't immoral. It didn't cross this line. But it wasn't wise. And what were your reasons, and what do you regret? What would you go back and do differently? Then think about this. Why, when we make decisions, are we more prone to look at our options through this filter of legal, moral, ethical, acceptable, rather than, first and foremost, is it wise? And then finally, we're going to ask you this week to commit to asking, not acting on, but asking the question for 7 days when you go to make a decision: is this the wise thing to do? So when you go to address a conflict, when you go to make a purchase, when you decide whether or not to do your homework, you can do whatever you want to do. We're not asking you to change anything. We're just saying, before you do it, ask yourself, in this situation, if I were to be wise, what would be the wise thing to do? Let's join in prayer. God, we thank you that you are a God that is wise, and you are at work in us. You are at work through us and in our world, even when we know that it looks like the world could self-destruct at any moment. You love us, and you love this world. Christ, we thank you that you've come not just to save us, but to give us abundant life, to be a source of courage and an example of how we are to live in the world. Help us to look to you as our example. Help us to be like you. Holy Spirit, we thank you that you are our guide, and you have promised to comfort and convict, guide and direct our paths. We ask that you would begin to give us wisdom this week. Give us what we need to know. Give us the strength to carry out that wisdom and the courage to not just do what is good, but to also do what is wise. Amen. Again, we're so glad that you're joined us. We hope that you will join us next week as we look at the last of our five questions. And stay tuned. Pastor Wes will be here to share with you.
Hey, Grace Point family. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share a really important announcement with you. One of the significant responsibilities of any leader or leadership team is to plan and prepare for the next steps and next chapters. With that in mind, our Board of Administration, of which I am a part, have periodically had conversations about a transition plan in which we would ask a younger pastor to join our team with the intention that I would offer mentoring and then eventually hand off the leadership baton. All of us anticipated that this would be several years in the future. However, as our team has been praying about next steps for Grace Point's ministry, I have just had this growing sense that now is the time for us to implement this transition plan. As we gather momentum from the disruption of COVID, it is the perfect time to welcome a new leader who can help the Grace Point family chart the course for future ministries. At the same time, I have had this sense that God is releasing me from the role of lead pastor. After almost 35 years in the lead role, 3 as a church planter, 10 at Spring Valley Church in Kalamazoo, and almost 22 here with you at Grace Point, I believe it is time to pass the leadership baton to others. As Val and I have prayed and wrestled with this sense of release, we firmly believe that the next chapter of ministry at Grace Point needs a younger, fresh voice in the leadership role. We can pass the baton knowing that we have done everything possible to prepare for an incredible new season of ministry. In a sense, I'm retiring from the lead pastor role, but it doesn't mean my ministry calling is over. I clearly sense, however, that God has something different for my next chapter. I'm not sure where God is leading, but I'm confident as we follow His promptings, He will guide our steps. We've experienced an amazing partnership for almost 22 years. We've not only done ministry together, we have shared life together, and for that, I am most thankful. When I felt called into pastoral ministry so many years ago, I asked God to give me the opportunity to serve long-term at just one or two churches over my career. I really wanted to share the journey of life with people and to build the kind of relationships that only come through shared challenges and celebrations. I am so grateful that you have been a part of the answer to that prayer. Over the next few months, our Grace Point Board of Administration and our Great Lakes Regional Leadership Team will be seeking the next person that God is calling to be Grace Point's next lead pastor. Our hope will be to have them join our team as soon as possible, and then over the next ministry year, or as God leads, I will provide mentoring and coaching. We will share opportunities leading together, and then I will hand off the leadership baton. Please know that I love you. I love our Grace Point family. I love our staff and the ministry that we get to do together. And I will continue to give you my very best during this time of transition. And I will be praying constantly for God to do even more than we can think or imagine. I'm certain that you will have lots of questions. And going forward, we will do our very best to keep you informed, and we will offer all sorts of opportunities for Q&A in public settings as well as just one-on-one. I wish I could talk to every single one of you in person, face-to-face, in the same room. We wanted all of you to receive this information as soon as possible so you can join us in praying and seeking God's perfect plan for our future. I mentioned a moment ago that I will continue to give you my very best during this time of transition, and I ask that you do the very same. Stay faithful in your prayers, stay faithful in serving, stay faithful in giving and engaging with the church family. All of those things will be really important for us to experience God's very best during this time of transition and in the amazing future that God has planned for us. Thank you. I look forward to seeing you again next weekend.